You ready?
Yep.
Okay. First of all, I want to say that I like to read, and I like to write, and I like to be at home because I'm an introvert. So if I'm holding my notes like this, my husband was trying to convince me, don't, you know, and I'm like, these are. So that's why. And I also want to say that, you know, nobody's journey is traveled alone, and there's a lot of people in this room who have been an enormous support to me. So you know who you are, and there's never been a part in my life where there hasn't been somebody there with me to support me, praying for me, whatever. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. I want to start with this Bible verse, 2 Corinthians 12:8-9. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. Amen. I begin with this verse because as I prayed about what to talk about tonight, how my life and its many twists and turns has played out, the word grace kept coming to mind. God's grace has carried me through, even when I didn't know he was there or I didn't care. I don't think my story is any more miraculous or special than any of yours. Last week, a friend of mine was telling me the story of her mom, and I said, her mom should be the one speaking. Yeah. My friend said no, that someone in the audience needed to hear what I had to say. So here I am. I almost pulled out several times. Sorry. My story starts out pretty ordinary. I grew up all around the state of Michigan with my older brother and my parents. My dad was first a public school teacher, then a principal, and then a superintendent. I was baptized Amy Elizabeth Jackson shortly after my birth in 1973. My childhood passions included reading, writing short stories, and playing with my dozens of baby dolls, dreaming of the day that I would have a family of my own. We attended Mass regularly, and I felt my heart drawn to Jesus, even as a young girl. Sadly, the culture is strong, and even though I slept with the Bible under my pillow, my understanding of the faith was weak. I grew up at a time where there was a lot of confusion in the church, and catechesis mostly included coloring pictures of Jesus that seemed distant and unattainable, and he seemed unreachable. At the age of 17, the summer before my senior year of high school, I became pregnant, and with that decided that my chance for heaven, among other things, was lost. I have scrupulous tendencies that I didn't understand at the time, so I assumed when you stepped so far out of God's plan, there was no turning back and no fixing it. In February of 1992, I gave birth to my first son and named him Brandon. I remember looking at his tiny face and thinking, you deserve more than this, and somehow I will give that to you. I did have him baptized a few months after his birth, but my life remained a mess. I started college a few years after I graduated high school in hopes that I could graduate faster and provide for my son. Each day that passed, the guilt and shame mounted in big ways. I felt ill-equipped to be someone's mother on every level. I continued to try to right my wrong, the actions. My son was never wrong. It was sort of like sitting in quicksand. The harder I tried to make it so it hadn't really happened, the further I sank. Still, the days passed. I attended college and worked at various jobs and tried to carve out enough time to spend with Brandon. In the summer of 1993, I was introduced to the man that would eventually become my husband and Brandon's adoptive father. It's funny how God speaks to us even when we aren't listening, and we definitely aren't speaking to him. I still remember that night like it was yesterday and hearing in my heart that Jesse and I would marry someday. While I wasn't practicing my faith even a little bit, the thought of being in a relationship, much less a marriage with someone who considered themselves a pro-abortion agnostic, was unimaginable to me. But my moral ground was soft, and over time, it seemed it didn't really matter that much. We started dating in the summer of 94 and were married 14 months later on the feast of St. Simon and St. Jude. We did marry in the Catholic Church, But the priest advised that we not have a full Mass because Jesse was unbaptized and his family was not Catholic or Christian. That was fine with me because, you know, Mass is so long. And I wanted to get on with the rest of things as quickly as possible. The wedding coordinator did ask if we wanted to take flowers to the Blessed Mother, and for some unknown reason, I said yes. I honestly don't know if I could have picked out the statue of the Blessed Mother had we not been directed that way, but many years later, that moment in our wedding ceremony would hold great significance for me and for us. When I look back on it all, I see what a disaster it was. I was married in a complete state of mortal sin. I hadn't attended confession for many, many years. The whole thing was unceremonious to me. We had already been living together, so really nothing changed. The guilt inside of me and the shame multiplied and life carried on. Jesse also has type 1 diabetes. I never knew the depths of what that meant until we married and his blood sugars would plummet. He would pass out and often have seizures. I called 911 a lot. The EMS guys would notice when we had painted or done some kind of interior work on the house. So I mean, I called a ton. It was terrifying. Some years later, he would also be diagnosed with epilepsy, which calmed down the seizures somewhat. As technology has advanced, things have gotten progressively easier, but it's a daily struggle for both of us to navigate this disease. A few months after we married, we found out that we were expecting our second child, a girl, Hannah, over there. I was elated because one fear I had as a single mother was that Brandon would never have a sibling. We had purchased and settled into a new home, and by the fall of 1996, 2 months before Hannah would be born, I felt called to join a church community. I wanted Brandon to have that, even though I didn't really know what it meant. I remember one extremely sweltering Sunday morning in September. I wore the warmest maternity clothes I owned. They were corduroys. I have no idea why I picked it. I just don't remember it. And I took Brandon to Mass. I sat in the back. I don't recall if I went up for communion or not, but I do remember thinking, can I just sit outside because I'm not good enough to be here? And so it went, week after week. I dragged my huge pregnant self to Mass with Brandon, feeling inadequate and unworthy and knowing no one. 1 week, Jesse, seemingly out of the blue, came with us. After we had Hannah, Mass attendance was hit or miss, but later that year we got a new pastor. God works in mysterious ways, and the new priest was someone that I had been in community theater with when I was a child. I was shocked to see him there, actually. The last time I saw him, he was in South Pacific wearing coconuts and a grass skirt. So it was quite interesting. He had a dynamic way of preaching that I had never heard before, and it made me long for Mass each week. I sat in the back. I still felt shame and guilt, and I felt like I didn't fit in, but I longed to be there, so we went. In the fall of 1997, we found out that our third child was on the way. Hannah was only 9 months old at the time, but I was so excited. Three children. That fall, Jesse made the choice to join RCIA and come into the Catholic Church. He dutifully attended his classes. He asked me questions that I could not answer. I felt stupid and shame and guilt. I was drawn in and drawn away from the church all at the same time. I was very jealous of his learning. I remember he would come home and tell me about a woman there who was someone's sponsor. This woman knew her stuff and seemed to annoy him. He would call her moral majority lady. She was conservative and knowledgeable in everything that neither of us were. Don't forget about her because she will play a big role in getting us on the right road many years later. When it was near to the Easter Vigil, several things highlighted how completely ignorant I was about the Catholic faith. The first was that Jesse was told to go to confession. May God forgive me for these words, but I said to him, I don't believe in confession, and he didn't go. Secondly, we were told to go to the Triduum. I had heard of a trilogy, but I'd never heard of a Triduum. I had no idea. So we went to Holy Thursday Mass, and it was seriously the longest Mass of my life. I was 3 weeks from my due date, had a 17-month-old with me that couldn't walk, and Brandon. The candidates for RCIA sat separately from their families. Thinking nothing could be worse than that, we went to Good Friday service. It was worse. Wow. It was long and quiet, and I was starving to death. Then came the Easter Vigil. Whoa. That mass made the other two seem quick. I don't recall having anything to follow along with the readings, and they just kept coming and coming, and it was dark. And I just have to say now, those are my favorite of the year, and when I have to miss any of them, I'm very sad. But that was where I was at the time. Even though Jesse's born and raised Catholic wife acted like a pagan, the church and all its goodness still baptized and confirmed him. Our lives remained unchanged on the outside. Our road was about to get significantly more hilly and difficult to navigate. My shame and guilt magnified, and now fear entered the picture. One day, I got up and thought, wow, I need to go to confession. So I went to the pastor's office with no idea what to do or say. I think I had a notebook full of sins committed. I blubbered them out, received absolution, and walked away. The guilt and the shame and the fear remained. Owen was born, our third child, and we were done. I was 24. My understanding was that the Catholic Church was okay with contraception now. My heart told a different story. I longed for more children, but Jesse wouldn't hear of it. God did hear of it, though, and in spite of the foolproof contraception methods, I found out we were expecting our fourth child in January of the year 2000. Life moved quickly at that time, and I had made some choices that I'm not proud of. In an effort to win the attentions of my husband, who seemed to have no interest in me for the most part, I had become quite the partier. Pregnancy slows that down, thank goodness, and in September of the year 2000, our fourth child was born. I knew at this point something in our marriage was terribly wrong. Due to the massive amounts of guilt and shame and fear that I carried around, I assumed it was me. My anxiety was getting high, so I distracted myself in unhealthy ways like drinking and shopping. I had bought all into the hippie, organic, natural way of living, which led me down the path of homeschooling. I knew no one that homeschooled, and I was terrified to whisper the word in front of my parents because of their lifelong dedication to the public schools. Eventually, I found someone that homeschooled, and she agreed to let me come over to talk it out with her. She told me she knew our family from church, and guess who it was? Moral majority lady. Who, by the way, has become one of my dearest friends and is now the godmother of our ninth child. But anyway, I went to her house and knew right away that I needed that life, minus all the freaky God stuff, of course. I joined the group she was in, and we attended the meetings and get-togethers. In the fall of 2001, the beginning of Brandon's fourth grade year, we started on a journey that would lead us straight into the arms of Jesus. The homeschool group that my friend was a part of was Catholic, very, very Catholic. I remember after one of the first mom's meetings thinking, some of these people go to church more than once a week. What is wrong with them? At that time, I was super worried that my kids wouldn't have a social outlet, so I did absolutely everything the group did. Every Friday, they would meet for Mass at the St. John Center in Plymouth, and a young Father John Ricardo would give a brief catechesis to the kids after Mass. What I heard in that chapel were things I could have never imagined. St. Peter betrayed Jesus, and he's a saint. St. Augustine was a hot mess, and he's a saint. And there were thousands more just like them, all broken up people who were healed by Christ, who served Christ, and who became saints. The room of darkness that I had been living in for so long suddenly had a sliver of light. It wasn't too late for me, but I had a lot of changes to make. And this Bible verse came to mind when I was reading this, Colossians 3:5-11. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourself of all such things as these, anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. Amen. That year was a big year for us. We built a house, had our fifth child. I felt like I won the lottery on many levels, and my heart was positively bursting for Jesus. There was also darkness wrapped around me that I still couldn't name. It was at that time, for the second time in our marriage, I found pornography on our computer. To say I was devastated is an understatement. Earlier in our marriage, it had been somewhat of an issue, but that was before I was striving for a real change. At that time, I attended the church of Oprah, who said it was okay and normal. This time, it was like a knife through my heart, as it was my understanding that we had agreed that would never happen again. I surveyed my options. I was still young. I had been a single mother already. I could leave. But dang, because Jesus was my king now, and he wasn't telling me that that was okay. The more I listened to Father John, learned about the theology of the body, fell in love with all the saints, the more I knew that what I really needed to do was to fast in various ways. So I did just that. But I didn't get help or support. And although I shared with some friends, they were more my worldly friends from the past, and all thought it was okay and normal. I took Jesse at his word that it would never happen again, and we moved along with what can only be described as completely functional yet dysfunctional relationship. Baby 6 arrived 2 years after baby 5. I was fully immersed in the church. I had read every single book I could get my hands on about the saints, the Mass, and church history. I listened almost exclusively to Catholic radio. Thank God for El Cresta and Catholic Answers and Teresa Tamio and everybody. I had done away with anything and everything that would interfere with my search for truth and my quest for heaven. Reconciliation became a regular part of my life, and I longed for it more and more. I desperately needed God in a way I had never understood before. St. Monica and St. Rita became my go-to ladies as our marriage teetered on the edge of a cliff. My anxiety was almost unmanageable, but my faith was solid. I was scared for what might come next, though. I had heard about a statue of Our Lady that would be at a local church in Ann Arbor, so I packed up 6 kids. The youngest, I think, he wasn't very old, only a few months old, and we went to see her. I had never heard of Our Lady of Fatima, but she took my breath away. Sorry. More than that, when I entered the church where she was, I felt completely surrounded by warmth and peace. That church was here, Christ the King, and I knew somehow that I had to make it back here. You could leave prayer requests near Our Lady, so I scribbled out several things that I don't recall now, but I'm sure they were answered. I left the church a changed person. More of the scales fell from my eyes. The guilt and shame and fear remained, and I thought unforgiveness too. I confessed it again and again. I gave birth to our 7th child. I plummeted down, but God held me up, which was grace. Jesse and I attended a prayer group for married couples that year. I couldn't bring myself to pray with him in that way. Something was stopping me. I assumed it was me and all of my baggage. I tried to lay that baggage at the feet of Jesus, but it kept coming with me. Pregnant with my 8th child, just 8 months after my 7th baby had been born, I sat in the Adoration Chapel and cried, and it was here. Do you have a tissue, by any chance? Sorry, I don't want to sit here. I could have looked in there too, I guess. Okay, perfect. Does it make it worse?
Get you one.
All right, perfect. Thank you. I begged Jesus to tell me what was wrong with my marriage. I had spent the last many years fasting and sacrificing for a purpose that I did not understand. I had twisted and conformed and tried to become who I thought my husband wanted me to be. I had worn out the pages of every marriage book that I could get my hands on. But on this day, I felt hopeless and alone. Nothing was working. At a recent marriage enrichment seminar, that my husband and I had attended, he rated me a zero on almost every aspect of our marriage. That was when I heard the Lord say, "I will reveal all that you need to know when you are ready to know it." I sobbed, but I vowed to be obedient. I had strayed enough in my lifetime and refused to leave his leadership again. I walked out, cried some more, and life carried on. It was at this point that I started miscarrying repeatedly with no real answers. I would have a live birth and then two miscarriages. I was also unable to lose weight no matter how much I dieted and exercised. I had successfully and without issues nursed 8 children, yet my 9th, I was running out of milk early in the day. After several near-fainting spells and being unable to function normally, I demanded that the doctor run some blood tests. He assured me that I was tired because I had 9 children and nothing more. But within a couple days, they called to tell me that my TSH, which is my thyroid, was extremely high and I needed to be treated immediately. Almost right away, I felt like a new person. My milk supply increased and I lost 30 pounds in just a few months. Still, my pattern of miscarriage continued and continues to this day. In all, we have lost 12 children that we are aware of. Many of them seemed healthy and had beating hearts 1 week, only to be just a still form on the ultrasound screen the next. The pain and the grief was overwhelming at times, and as time went on, I was sure that the losses were my main cross to bear. I longed for the days when I would see 2 lines on the pregnancy test and know that a baby would arrive 9 months later. I was forever grateful for the children that we had, of course, but mourned the losses all the same. It was a strange spot to be in. So many living children and trying to explain the longing in my heart for just one more. I felt alone on many levels and turned to God in my sadness. Slowly, I learned to find joy in the fact that we had many souls in heaven waiting for us. I somehow found peace in that fact, and that was just how it was going to be for the remainder of my fertile years. Before this baby, we lost 3 in a row, the last one being on Good Friday last year. I cannot describe the graces that I received from a loss on such a holy day. I had to have a DNC that day, and somehow felt a teeny tiny sliver of unification with Jesus on the cross. I was certain that that was the end of my fertility, but as Sister Joseph Andrew from the Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, always says, one never knows. When I was very pregnant with our 11th child, a dear friend of mine sent me a Facebook message that read something like, "I think the Holy Spirit wants you to finish your college degree, and if you want to tell me to shut up, that's fine." This friend worked at the college at Eastern, where I had attended 20 years earlier. I had gone a long way, but once the baby started coming, my degree seemed unattainable, so I stopped. While I never felt that it was necessary for me to finish, I did always kind of have a longing in my heart to complete what I had started. My friend made it pretty easy, because of her connections at work and dedication to me, to make that happen. And before I knew it, I was enrolled in online classes with a plan in mind. Baby 11, Frances, the girl, Frances, came 3 weeks early via my first C-section. When she was just a few weeks old, Frances and I embarked on our journey through the Civil War online course. She was a fabulous study partner. I had no clue what God had in mind, but I knew this was all Him, so I followed. As the years had gone by, that day in adoration 6 years earlier kept coming back to me, waiting, watching, and listening. For all that time, I thought my unforgiveness of Jesse's past actions was ruining my marriage and family. We were tight on funds, so I didn't feel right seeking counseling for myself. To go back a few years, while I was pregnant with my 10th baby, I became determined to figure this out once and for all. By then, pornography addiction was finally being talked about, so there were many books on healing as a spouse of an addict. I didn't think Jesse was an addict, but I shared a lot of the pain and feelings that the spouses in the books did. I read books on men who had been addicts and had recovered. I read books on the science of pornography addiction. I read Christian and non-Christian books alike. I confessed to my unforgiveness at least 30 times in the Sacrament of Reconciliation. Finally, a friend pointed me to a Catholic therapist who agreed to see me for free. When I met with him, I described my feelings and weaknesses. I was searching for help with my seemingly inability to forgive Jesse for his past, what I had called indiscretions. He asked me to describe my husband to him. I talked about how Jesse had always been a hands-on dad, active in our church and community, always the guy to help others move or with childcare. He had always willingly changed diapers and let me go out with friends. In recent years, he had attended Catholic men's retreats and groups, listened to Christian music, and read Christian publications. Everything on the outside seemed like I was married to a strong man of God. And while I was sharing, what I was sharing with the counselor was absolutely true. But within 15 minutes of my description, the therapist told me that he believed Jesse had been lying to me for years and that my hunches had been God telling me that my husband was hiding bigger things from me. He explained how those who struggle with sexual impurity and other types of addictive behaviors have the ability to live two very different lives. The good they do is almost always an over-the-top kind of thing to masquerade the secret lives they might be living. I couldn't believe it. Our 11th child was 9 weeks old. In the 2 years before that, we had attended and even been speakers at several marriage retreats. Things seemed better, except that I couldn't forget the past. So the counselor asked me to do a very hard thing. I had to ask Jesse if he was being truthful with me. I was afraid to ask, afraid for his response, and mostly I didn't want to know if the truth was what the therapist suggested. I waited for a day that felt like a lifetime, but finally I worked up the courage to ask, and his answer blew my entire world. He hadn't stopped when he originally told me that he did, but he had stopped. And worse, for me, was that he had lied all those times that I had confronted him, due to God putting it on my heart for so many years. He had somehow worked around internet security and other blocks, and it had hidden it all from me. Those first few weeks after the disclosure were brutal. I lost 14 pounds in 10 days. I cried almost nonstop, and I never slept. How could this have happened? I found a spouse support group at a nearby parish, and Jesse and I were in counseling together. For the first time, I focused purely on getting myself healthy and well. I read, I prayed, and I trusted in God alone. I knew only His grace could repair this marriage, and I knew with 11 children to raise, I had to give every last ounce of myself to make a home for them that was not broken. Jesus truly carried us in those months. But I knew in my heart that there was more that He wasn't telling me. I asked and Jesse said no, but I had learned to only trust God. In prayer, He told me that it was time, and He revealed the rest to me. After discerning, I went to Jesse and the therapist with what God had shown me, and Jesse did confess everything else. My heart was shattered, even though I knew God's timing is always perfect. I mourned and grieved like I didn't know was possible. I also rejoiced because the truth was finally out. All those years of wondering what was wrong were over, and now we could start new. Jesse said he was committed to staying clean, and his behaviors backed that up. I was committed to learn about what real mercy and forgiveness involved. For his part, Jesse had finally allowed God into his heart and mind for full healing. He made monumental changes in his choices, behaviors, and media consumption that worked for him. It's different for everyone, but these are the things that worked for him. During the most difficult time, I would repeat to myself all day, every day, this quote from St. Francis of Assisi: start by doing what's necessary, next do what's possible, and before you know it, you're doing the impossible. Against all odds, I continued in my plan to finish my degree, and in January of that year, the first day of classes, discovered that I was expecting our 12th baby. Francis was only 5 months old, and I was certain that I would miscarry. I wasn't sure if I should drop the classes as I awaited either an impending miscarriage, which at this point in my life would have most certainly pushed me over the edge, or if the pregnancy progressed, I would suffer severe morning sickness while caring for an infant, homeschooling 10 other children, struggling from severe PTSD due to our marriage issues, and quote-unquote helping, which I wasn't really doing, my oldest son and his wonderful fiance, now wife, prepare for their wedding that was in the summer. My class load that semester was high, but I felt God cheering me on. So while Jesse and I navigated the various groups and limited counseling that we could afford, I plugged along at home, taking communications and nutrition classes. Much to my great joy, my pregnancy did not end in miscarriage and was the easiest I had had so far. Morning sickness, which had been debilitating in the past, was mild. The week before Brandon and Rose's wedding, while 7.5 months pregnant, I completed all of my necessary credits and the bachelor's degree that I had begun with a 6-month-old baby in my arms 24 years or 22 years earlier was achieved. All God, every bit. I felt accomplished, even if there was no real direction for me to go after that. The wedding was beautiful, and Augustine John Paul Pio arrived 6 weeks later, 3 weeks early, via my second emergency C-section. I thought it would be the bright light in what had been a hellish year, but it wasn't to be. He was very sick, had to be intubated. I couldn't sit up, and I couldn't see him. I lay in my hospital bed alone, flat on my back, in incredible pain, both emotionally and physically. Jesse would text me pictures, but my baby was attached to so many devices, it was hard to even see his face. Satan seemed to be mocking me, saying, "See, you followed his ways, and this is what he gave you." But I refused to listen. I trusted God, and after a few days, and lots of prayers, many of which came from you all, I know, Augustine improved greatly. By the time he was 9 days old, he was completely healthy, and we went home. He was baptized on the Feast of St. Faustina, just one year after my life had both fallen apart and come together. It has now been 3+ years since all was revealed. It's been a hard few years, I won't lie. The trauma was huge, and the pain still lingers. I have learned so much about empathy for others. When I was in the thick of this, my behavior was erratic at best. I was a hot mess. I was blessed to have a huge, loving, and understanding support group, but I also know that some people probably thought I was legit crazy. It was an excellent lesson for me to remember that what I'm seeing on the outside is just a glimpse of a person and not their heart. I will be forever grateful for that. God has given me a strong calling to help others that are in the same situation that I was. Certified counselors that specialize in sexual addiction cost hundreds of dollars per session. As Jesse and I navigated through that world, we often felt hopeless. Grocery money was stretched thin. We don't vacation. We didn't have any extra. I knew God wanted our marriage and family to stay together, so I trusted him to make a way where there didn't seem to be one. He opened the doors for us, and our long-term desire, if it is God's will, is to open doors for others. Currently, Jesse leads a group at a local church for men who struggle with sexual impurity, and I have completed a program through Focus on the Family, making me a life coach, which is a joke. I hate that term. I was like, can we not call it that? I should in no way coach anyone on their life, but it's a hoop you have to go through for the proper certification. I recently finished the necessary classes and coursework to become certified through the American Academy of Sexual Addiction Therapists to help support spouses of those who struggle with sexual immorality or impurity. This is really not what I thought I would be doing with my life, but it is where God has taken me, and it's brutal sometimes. As I mentioned earlier, Jesse and I were married on the feast of St. Simon and St. Jude. I didn't know that at the time, but talk about impossible causes. A better day couldn't have been chosen for our marriage. With that in mind, we have chosen the name Jude for this baby, our 13th on earth, who is due on Palm Sunday. Another Bible passage that often comes to mind is Matthew 19:26. Jesus looked at them and said, "With man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible." These days I spend my time relishing in the awe of God's grace and goodness. I spend a decent amount of time tending the laundry, dishes, cooking, homeschooling, and other household chores. We now have 2 married children, 1 more in college, and many ages in between teens and babies. It sounds mundane to most, I'm sure, but I truly enjoy my vocation, and I can't imagine having another. It is a perfect fit for me. Our children bring me so much joy every day, even amidst what can sometimes be turbulent toddler and teen years. I have learned so much from my children, every single one. About 5 years ago, I took up the habit of writing down the things I'm grateful for in a gratitude journal, the simple and the grand. Last year, we endured a cancer scare, and Jesse had to have major surgery to remove part of his lung. I spent 6 nights in the hospital with him. I slept on a windowsill and alternated between trying to help Jesse stay comfortable and going down to the Adoration Chapel located in the hospital, conveniently very close to a coffee shop. In that time, our family came together, as did our faith community, and once again I was overwhelmed with gratitude for all that God had blessed us with. The background on my laptop currently reads this quote from a favorite author of mine, Anne Voskamp. It says, "It definitely gets harder before it gets easier, but it will definitely get better if you don't give up when it's hardest." Sometimes I think the truly better won't happen if and until I make it to heaven, but I know that it's all worth it. That's it.